It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where we have a light rain, 43 degrees both here on Burrow Hill and out at the airport. Out at the airport, their wind speeds are down to 13 miles per hour from the east. They were as high as 21 today. They're still calling for 50% chance of rain today with the cloudy skies, high near 45, east wind to 10, and we've certainly been higher than that. Tonight, rain's likely mainly after 1 a.m. Cloudy skies tonight with a low around 41, east winds to 5. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Shunack tribe is creating a new federally backed program to preserve their language. Leaders from Anchorage Assembly are asking Mayor Dave Bronson how it plans to enforce an indoor mask requirement. And Homer, do they want to be in the same district legislatively as Kodiak? Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Supreme Court says it'll consider the constitutionality of Texas's new abortion law, but won't block enforcement of the near-total ban on all abortions in the state. Today, the nation's high court agreed to review the case November 1st. Following two internal Supreme Court rules, it takes the votes of only four justices to grant review in a case, but it takes the votes of five justices to reverse a lower court decision like this one. The vote in the Texas case is also an indication of deep internal splits within the court. Reaction today from Press Secretary Jen Psaki at the White House.
The president has been clear in his position that SB 8 is blatantly unconstitutional. It not only violates the right to safe and legal abortion established under Roe v. Wade, but it creates a scheme to allow private citizens to interfere with that right and to evade judicial review. That is why he's directed a whole of government response to it.
The attorneys general of Texas and Missouri are suing the Biden administration for halting construction of the border wall. They argue the administration does not have the authority to cancel the project. Angela Kucherga of member station KTEP with details.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt announced their lawsuits in the border city of El Paso. They say the Biden administration is obligated to use the $1.4 billion approved by Congress for border wall construction.
Our lawsuit is about forcing that expenditure to be spent the way Congress intended. And the reason we care so much about this is it is having tremendously negative effects on our states.
The attorneys general blamed the Biden administration for the record number of migrants crossing the border. Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush, who's also running for state attorney general, filed a similar lawsuit in July. For NPR News, I'm Angela Kucherga in El Paso.
A New York jury has convicted a former associate of Rudy Giuliani, one of former President Donald Trump's staunchest allies. Lev Parnas was found guilty today of violating campaign finance laws during the 2018 election cycle. Actor Alec Baldwin's issuing his first public statement since his colleague was killed by a prop gun that he fired on the set of a movie on the outskirts of Santa Fe yesterday. We have the latest from NPR's Netta Ulaby.
Alec Baldwin discharged the prop weapon that left his director hospitalized and the director of photography dead on Thursday afternoon in New Mexico. "There are no words," the actor tweeted, "to convey my shock and sadness regarding the tragic accident that took the life of Helena Hutchins, who he described as a deeply admired colleague." Baldwin said his heart was broken for Hutchins' husband and young son. He said he was fully cooperating with police to investigate how this tragedy occurred. Fatal mishaps with weapons are rare on film sets. It remains unclear exactly what happened on the set of Rust that led to this human casualty. Netta Ulaby, NPR News.
It's NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Aleutic language has lost 4 speakers in the last year. Tribal leaders say it's a big loss. Of the 30 remaining speakers, there are just a handful of people left who are able to teach Aleutic. As KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, Kodiak's Shunack tribe is creating a new federally backed program to preserve the indigenous language.
The Shunack tribe's Master Apprentice Language Program's goal is to train new Aleutic teachers. Candace Branson, the program services director for the Shunack tribe, says there's plenty of interest in learning the language, but there aren't enough people qualified to teach it.
And that's a great problem to have. Like, everybody wants to learn. What a problem, right? But right now, we're not able to fill those roles. We're struggling to keep the programs running because we don't have enough teachers.
As an Aleutic language speaker, Branson says she's planning to be very involved in the tribe's upcoming Master Apprentice program.
We submitted an application to the Administration for Native Americans to fund a 3-year Aleutic language preservation and maintenance grant. And the grant includes developing a Master Apprentice program that would teach adults how to speak Aleutic fluently as second language speakers could. The overall goal is to increase the capacity on our island and within our language movement to teach our language. Right now, there are so few adults who can teach our language that there's always this need for teachers.
Branson says the tribe is planning to start accepting applications from potential apprentices in December after the tribe's annual meeting. Applications would be reviewed in January, and the first 2 apprentices would begin their full-time program in March. The program includes a stipend so language learners can focus on Aleutic. Branson says one long-term goal is to create what she calls an immersion house. That's a live-in setting where apprentices and masters would study and speak Aleutic all day long. And looking even further ahead,
a language that is used in Safeway, used at the coffee shop, used between mother and daughter and grandchild. And we have to start with teaching adults who can teach their families and teach other kids and teach other parents. We have to get some people fluent. The hard truth about our language movement today is that we're losing our speakers.
The objective for the 3-year program is to produce 5 speakers fluent enough to teach the language in school. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Leaders from the Anchorage Assembly are asking Mayor Dave Bronson's administration to clarify how it will enforce an indoor mask requirement that passed last week. In a letter sent to the mayor and city manager, Assembly Chair Suzanne LaFrance and Vice Chair Chris Constant say they've been getting questions from constituents about the measure. They are asking the mayor to explain how the rules will be enforced and by which department. The ordinance does not spell out specific fines for violation. Instead, it says the city will use, quote, all available enforcement options to assure compliance, close quote. Bronson's administration has not enforced the rules, which have many exemptions, including for gyms and fitness centers, churches, and members of Dave Bronson's executive team. The letter points out that the city hired 3 code enforcement officers last year with federal COVID money who are still on staff. Constant, who represents downtown, told the Anchorage Daily News that if the administration does not enforce the measures, it could be grounds for a recall. Corey Allen Young, a spokesperson for the Bronson administration, wrote in an email that the administration is working with the IT department to create a web form for the public to report violations. He did not specify whether there would be penalties for not complying. A cyclist was attacked by a bear in the Cantwell area. Alaska State Troopers report being notified about a Tuesday morning incident in which the victim said he was riding alone along the Jack River in the vicinity of the Parks Highway when he saw a brown bear running toward him. Troopers say the man told them he jumped off his bike and yelled at the bear, then fell as the animal made contact, biting him on the lower leg before it ran off. The man reported walking to the highway and calling a friend for a ride to the Healy Medical Clinic for treatment of puncture wounds and a laceration. The victim said he saw bear tracks in the snow prior to the attack and that he was carrying a gun but did not fire it. Under the state's new redistricting process, one proposal would have residents near Homer in the same legislative district as Kodiak, 140 miles away by water. As Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, their concerns show one of the challenges in drawing district lines.
A series of communities stretch northeast from Homer along East End Road, including Fritz Creek and Fox River.
These areas are economically and socially tied to Homer, go to school here, work here, use our harbor, use our airport. They're part of the Homer community and should have the same legislative representative.
That's Homer area resident Lori Benson. On Wednesday, the redistricting board held a public hearing over nearly 6 hours, open to Alaskans calling in from across the state. But most of the callers were from these communities near Homer. Benson's point about the area being socially and economically integrated is important in redistricting because the state constitution says it's a factor for drawing district lines. Lydia Martyshev is from Vosnesenka, a village near Fox River settled by Old Believer Russian Orthodox Christians. She says her community is inseparable from Homer.
We are a part of the Homer community. We do all of our shopping there. My daughter's going to preschool in Vaughn School, and she is part of the Kenai Peninsula School District. My husband fishes in Pekinut.
Residents of rural interior Alaska know about the downside of being split off from similar neighboring communities. Currently, western interior villages are in three different districts, and they're all separate from a district that includes most of the rural interior population. Christopher Simon says this has caused problems. He's a Fairbanks resident, originally from Huslia on the Koyukuk River.
The Koyukuk River villages have been unfairly split up for numerous years, and as a result, we are marginalized in the political process. We have some villages that are with the northern district, and we have some villages on the Koyukuk River that are with the Northwest District, and we are an afterthought to many of the issues, and we would like our own representative from our region to represent our interests and the things that we value.
But it's a challenge for the board to keep one area together without affecting others. The reason why the board is considering splitting the communities near Homer has to do with drawing Kodiak's district boundaries. Kodiak is more than 5,000 people short of the population it would need to have its own district.
While Kodiak's certainly a borough, a city, it's a unique place, it's a beautiful place, it doesn't have enough folks to have their own dedicated state representative.
That's Peter Torkelson, the redistricting board's top staff member. For the past decade, Kodiak has shared a district with Cordova and other Prince William Sound communities, as well as parts of the Kenai Peninsula borough off of the road system. But due to population changes, even with these communities, it's roughly 1,200 people short of the goal. And it's not clear where those people would come from. The Homer area is one idea. But the alternatives have their own problems. And walking through them shows how complicated redistricting is. First off, Kodiak, like much of Alaska, doesn't have a lot of next-door neighbors. Torkelson says this puts Alaska's redistricting board in a somewhat unique position compared to its counterparts in the lower 48.
Alaska courts have recognized redistricting in Alaska is a, quote, Herculean task, end quote. And part of that, the courts have noted, is just Alaska's immense and rugged geography.
Drawing from anywhere north or west of Kodiak would lower the population of the district that includes the Aleutians and Bristol Bay. And that district is also short of people. If it or any of the other western districts were to add population, they would again split the rural interior. It's kind of a chain reaction. Torkelson says these kinds of interlock changes can't be avoided.
We often hear things like, if you could just make this one change, if you could just change this one spot, then my concern might be addressed. And the board is very sympathetic to that, but the reality of redistricting is that there is no such thing as one change. Every district is connected. If you push one place, someplace else must get bigger. If you pull in, another has to go out. Well, I heard one testifier describe it like squeezing a balloon.
The board could add Valdez to the Kodiak district, but only if the district didn't also include Cordova, because that would be too many people. And where would that leave Cordova? Another idea for the Kodiak-based district is to add Seward and its neighboring communities. But through another chain reaction, that could require splitting off part of South Anchorage, including Girdwood, to be added to another very different district based in the northern Kenai Peninsula. Those are the complications arising from just one district, and the board has to draw the lines for 39 others by the November 10th deadline. Alaskans will have another chance to call in to give testimony to the redistricting board on October 30th. The board also is holding in-person hearings around the state. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan says employers should disregard President Biden's vaccine mandate, keep unvaccinated workers on the job, and wait for the courts to rule.
I think the president's going to lose that case in every court in America. So if you're a business leader, here's my respectful request. Hold off. Wait for the litigation to play out.
Sullivan weighed in on the hot-button issue in a speech on the Senate floor this week. He said Alaskans have many reasons for not taking the shot, although he said he did.
I think people should get vaccinated. I just don't think the President of the United States has the constitutional authority to tell Americans, do it or you're going to get fired.
Biden has said private sector employees who refuse the vaccine can opt for weekly testing instead. Wendy Parmet is a public health law professor at Northeastern University. She says the executive branch clearly has the power to set stricter rules for the federal workforce and its contractors.
The president was careful to tie the vaccine mandates to areas where the federal government has broad and clear constitutional authority.
Biden's mandate for companies with more than 100 employees is coming through the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Parmet says vaccinations would be a departure from OSHA's usual concerns.
But certainly there's a strong argument, given that the threat that the pandemic has posed in the workplace, that OSHA has that authority.
Parmet says a lot will depend on what exemptions will be allowed. The rules have not been published as of yet. Archipelago Lot 2A. That's the name of a prominent public space along downtown Juneau's waterfront that few people know. Officials with the Juneau Docks and Harbors think they've got a better name that fits with some new public art. It would also help teach throngs of cruise ship visitors a little about Alaska civil rights history. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
You want to do another ride? 4-year-old Emmett Heimbigner is doing some wobbly laps on a bike that recently got pedals.
I am Emmett, and I've wanted to ride a bike, and I haven't done it by myself.
His dad's keeping an eye on him, and so is Alaska civil rights leader Elizabeth Paratrovich in a giant 3-story mural behind him.
Do you recognize her?
The decked-over lot along Juneau's Seawalk that Emmett is riding on could soon be renamed for her, Paratrovich Plaza. Juneau Docks and Harbors officials have been calling it the Archipelago Lot. That name seems to come from a boring legal description of the property. Kirby Day, who's worked for the cruise industry in Juneau for decades, says it's not well known.
When you say archipelago lot, no one really knows what that is or what that means.
That checked out with people walking by during the lunch hour on Thursday. Emmett's dad, for example, didn't know the archipelago name, but knew Paratrovich. Juneau Docks and Harbors officials want to rename the lot, both to fit with the new mural that was finished in September and to help people get around the waterfront better. Here's Docks and Harbors board member Mark Ridgway.
There's a natural flow to naming it Paratrovich Plaza, given the mural's existence there, and we're talking about people who were just walking off of a boat. I'd like it better than, say, the Norwegian Nook or the Carnival Corner or the P&O Outlook.
The board committee voted 7-1 on Wednesday to recommend the Juneau Assembly formally change the name. Ray Wilson was also walking the waterfront on Thursday. The 69-year-old has lived in Juneau most of his life and wears a hat that says Native Veteran.
I think for a long time, the city of Juneau
hadn't recognized the Native people and haven't given them enough credit for what they do and what they put into the pot, so to speak.
Wilson also has a fuzzy memory that he might be a distant relative of Elizabeth Paratrovich.
To include Paratrovich in junior history is a big step towards recognizing Native people.
The Docks and Harbors Board recommendation to rename the lot has to go through one more meeting before it goes to the Juneau Assembly. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska's biggest seafood competition attracts lots of entries. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Symphony of Seafood attracted 18 entries in the competition that has showcased and promoted new products made by major companies and small mom and pops since 1993. The contest features market-ready products in several categories, retail and food service, salmon and whitefish, and new to the lineup is a Bristol Bay Choice, which is awarded to the best new sockeye product. Items made from Alaska seaweeds also are highlighted, says Riley Smith, Deputy Director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, the Symphony host.
Alaska barbecue sauce at Barnacle Foods with Alaska kelp in it. Premium Aquatics and Seagrove Kelp also entered their ribbon kelp.
Barnacle Foods of Juneau won the grand prize 2 years ago for its Bullwhip Kelp Hot Sauce. Another category, Beyond the Plate, features more uses of fishery products. It attracted 5 entries.
From Alaska Skin Dog Treat to Alaska Smoked Sea Salt to salmon oil, of course, and Deep Blue Sea Bath Soak by Waterbody.
An expert panel will judge all of the products on November 17th, and seafood fans will get to taste them all at a bash that evening. First place winners and a People's Choice Award will be announced at Pacific Marine Expo's center stage on November 19th. Smith says a special presentation that day also will discuss how to get new products into the marketplace. The grand prize winner and products placing second and third will be kept under wraps until the symphony moves to Juneau in February. Top winners get a free trip to the big Seafood Expo North America in Boston in March, where their products will compete nationally. Check out the lineup at Pacific Marine Expo November 18th through 20th in Seattle and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 22nd day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:01. It won't set again until 6:45. That will give us 9 hours and 44 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 49 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 16, set in 1966, and our record high was 55, set in 1981. Currently 45 degrees out at the airport, still just 43 on our tiny back porch behind the station, but they have east winds up to 15 miles per hour at the airport, and they've been blowing from the east out there pretty steadily all day. 50% chance of rain today with cloudy skies and a high that we are at now, 45. Rain's likely tonight, mainly after 1 a.m. Cloudy skies tonight, too, with a low of 41. East wind continuing, coming down to 5. For tomorrow, rain, high near 47. North winds to 25, gusting as high as 35 tomorrow. Chance of precipitation is 60%. New precipitation amounts between 0.5 and 3/4 of an inch possible. And I've been looking at the fact that they call it precipitation rather than rain. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up on the east side at 3:22 this afternoon. That'll be a 9.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:55 this evening of -0.3. Over on the west side, You have a high tide coming up at 3:54, almost 4 o'clock, in Larsen Bay. That will be a 15-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 10:29 p.m., almost 10:30, of minus 9/10. Mariners, we do have a gale warning for tomorrow for Marmot Island to Sitkanak. With east southeast 30 right now, diminishing to 20 knots this afternoon. Seas 16 feet, except north of Dangerous Cape, seas 13 feet. For tonight, northeast 25, seas up to 21 feet. And for tomorrow, north wind 30, except north 35, north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 18 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory through Saturday. East wind to 30 knots right now and seas to 7 feet in the Shelikof. For tonight, northeast 25, diminishing to 15 knots after midnight, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, north 20, increasing to 30 knots in the afternoon, seas to 7 feet. The Kodiak History Museum is in the process of gathering materials for a new exhibit, Making History Day by Day, Kodiak, Our Stories in the COVID-19 Pandemic, is a reflection on the last 18 months in Kodiak. The museum wants to feature you, your voice, and your story in this telling of Kodiak's COVID-19 experience. You can contribute to the exhibit by sending an email. Just send your reflections, pictures, and memes by email to curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org, and they would like those by tomorrow. So again, that email address is curator, C-U-R-A-T-O-R, @kodiakhistorymuseum.org. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Tuesday, October 26th. That's next Tuesday. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. In addition, they will be having a regular meeting on Thursday, October 28th. That meeting will also begin at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing for both meetings. Public members are encouraged to tune in here to KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link as well as meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any questions, please call the clerk at 486-8636. And the Kodiak Women's Resource Crisis Center annual membership meeting is happening Tuesday, October 26th. That's happening over Zoom. Everyone in the community is invited and welcome. Email them at outreach@kwrcc.org, or you can call them at 486-6171 for information on how to attend the meeting.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.